a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
For another edition of the MGO Blog Roundtable is the man who made last week all about sharks.
Hey!
All about sharks.
No.
Everywhere you talk to Sam.
That's not true.
I mean, what is going on your show, Sam? I mean, I thought we...
Come on.
What's going on? But...
I'm just informing the people.
He is back, and his... The guy, his balance. The balance to his equation is back on his side. First, we'll start off with Brian Cook from MGO Blog.
Hey, Brian, Craig. Hey, good morning. Craig, what's going on?
And then the man that balances the equation, Ed Fang, is back this week from the Power Rank. How you doing this morning, Ed?
I'm good, and I know nothing about sharks.
That's good.
What?
Nothing.
Surely you must know that they are made entirely of cartilage. They have no bones. You knew that.
They live in water?
I know that.
They have to swim constantly because they can't stay in one place because their gills don't work like that.
That's very interesting, Brian.
Their blood is suffused with urea. Which is interesting. So if you want to eat it, you have to do some stuff to it.
They like to chomp on surfers.
Wait, Craig couldn't ballast this cook guy last
week. Now he tried. Now I'll give Craig credit. He tried. He tried and failed, but tried.
Come on, guys.
It was Craig Ross. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, actually. We do have big tiger sharks here. They're my wife. Likes to be out on the ocean in her ocean canoe, and she saw one this week went under a boat about a 12 or 14 foot long tiger shark.
I don't know how you get her to come back, Craig. I mean,
sharks.
The weather is great. She's seeing sharks. She's not in the. Yeah. She's not actually swimming with the sharks.
Well,
they're just swimming under the boat.
You never know when
she swims with the dolphins. Sometimes.
Also, there's missile alerts. It's crazy out there.
Yeah. Right. That's right. That's right. So, guys, we didn't get a chance to talk much basketball this week, but we dive into it.
Thank you. Thank
or last week we didn't get a chance to get into it, but this week we're going to get more into it. And if I had told you,
yes,
that Duncan Robinson was, and I'm not calling him a defensive stalwart, but this, that he had become not only
what a ferocious shot blocker,
a much better, a much better defender when it came to moving his feet, but he was blocking shots that on the offensive end of the floor, that he wasn't just shooting threes. He was putting it on the floor and pulling up. He was getting all the way to the rim and finishing. I got to tell you, guys, there was no evidence that he was capable of playing like this. And
And when he did block that shot, everybody stopped. They were like, what happens now?
And the guy is 6'8".
He's always
and he actually
been,
blew
he's
the call
been
right
6'8".
After, too.
He's been 6'8", his entire Michigan career, though.
I think that ball actually bounced out of bounds after Duncan had thunder blocked it. So that call didn't really bother me. But, yeah, we have synergy stats that we pay for, and he's up to, like, an average defender, largely because people keep trying to take him in the post. And that happened early in the season. Penn State's game plan coming into this game was, we're going to post up these guys who can't post up. So, like, their center who actually got injured and knocked out, he's hitting 70%, but 80% of his makes are assisted. So this is just a dump off for a dunk guy. And they're like, we're going to post him up on Mo Wagner. And, you know, Mo's not the best defender in the world. If that's Haas, that's a problem. But, like, they just don't have the skill to do that. And
well, the one that you could definitely see that was their game plan with
Stevens?
No, their big-time player, the one that's Carr.
Carr.
Yeah, they were committed to posting him up, and Michigan had an outstanding plan to nullify that from the jump.
Yeah, they haven't been doing a lot of doubling, but that was like, okay, once that guy goes down the block, we're going to double. And they gave up maybe one or two assists, but they also disrupted the flow of Penn State's offense for a large part of the first half. And the rest of Carr versus Simpson reminded me of that game where Nick Stauskas was playing Indiana, and they put Yogi Ferrell on him. And this just blew his mind, and he had a terrible game because he was like, why is this little bug man up in my stuff? And for the whole first half, Carr was just baffled that they were putting this 5'9 guy on him.
Yeah, and well, I thought, you know, I gave the defensive plan a ton of credit because what struck me was how his opportunities were limited. They got the ball out of his hands.
Yeah.
Very consistently. And credit to Penn State in the second half of the game, they abandoned that and started getting him the ball off of dribble action to the rim, and it wound up being much more effective. And so the question to me coming out of the break, guys, was the second half defensively for Michigan going to be like the last two road games, where against Wisconsin, against Northwestern, it was the tale of two cities from the first half to the second, where shooting percentages really got a ton better. They shot better from three. In the Wisconsin game, they went from like 39% to 60%. Both teams outscored Michigan by double digits in the second half, and they were on their way. Penn State was on its way to doing that in this game, and then Beeline adjusts to the adjustment, and they start throwing some zone in there, and that stems the tide somewhat.
Yeah, it was interesting because Lamar Stevens is their kind of mid-range guy, kind of a Nigel Hayes type. And he gets a wide-open, like, elbow jumper, like, I think their second possession down. Mm-hmm. And that looks like that's not going to go so well. And then Michigan adjusts their zone so that, you know, you have Rockman in his face or whoever rotates down and actually provides some presence there without necessarily disrupting the integrity of the zone's ability to prevent a three. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I thought, you know, I didn't think the man defense was going that badly, but they had one of those kind of unfortunate 2018 basketball team droughts at the beginning of the first half. So their defense really needed to kick in, and they held Penn State over the course of the game to less than a point per possession. That's usually going to be a W.
You know, and how good is Penn State? Because I came in this morning and yeah. I agreed. I said I think this was a really, really good win.
Well, without Watkins, that's tough because like their backup posts are a huge downgrade. So Watkins is a guy who's got like a near top 30 block rate. He's like a top 10 defensive rebounder in the country. So like losing them was the worst thing that could happen to them that wasn't losing Carr.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to look at my numbers and see that I had them Penn State as about 3-point favorites to win that game. Michigan about 36% win probability. So, I mean, that would support that that's a good win. I think Penn State's made huge strides from last year. I mean, these guys couldn't put the ball in the basket last year. Carr clearly helps. So, I think it was a really good win. I think you saw, I mean, you know, the defensive effort in the first half was, I think, pretty exceptional. And, you know, they scored enough points down the stretch to get the win. We saw them make some foul shots.
They did.
Xavier even hit one. So, you know, there's a lot of randomness in that. And it's good to see that go in our favor. And I think it was a great win.
Craig, I started off asking the question about, the metamorphosis. I don't know what other way to put it with Duncan Robinson. You just couldn't have convinced me that he was capable of playing this much better on the defensive end of the floor. And yet here we sit. Beeline deserves a lot of credit. For really sticking with him through amazing struggle to get to this point.
Yeah, I mean, last, to Brian's credit, even though we did go way avant-garde last week with the new coaching hires, the last words Brian said last week on the show were Duncan Robinson, as we were going off the air. And that's right. He in the Wisconsin game, I think, was 4-7 from three, was 6-8 from three in the Iowa game. His shooting seems to be back after a protracted slump. He didn't get many opportunities. OSU took care of him with the exception of one really good look that he missed in the Ohio State game. And then he came back last night with 19 points and he hit three threes and he did a lot of stuff. But, you know, the truth is, and I think Sam, you or Brian mentioned this, is that Duncan is a limited perimeter defender, but he's really, I would say, probably a better than average at worst post defender. And so when he's defending in the post, he does a pretty good job, and he did a great job last night. He was phenomenal. And he was certainly Michigan's best player and was the key. I mean, I thought Mo Wagner had a great game, too. Made a couple big threes down the stretch, and I agree. Beeline did a good job. I mean, Carr and I mean, Penn State's a good team. I mean, Carr and Stevens, in particular, are good players, and Shep Garner's not bad. And they had 40 points last night, but I'm looking at 40 shot equivalents to get 40 points. And you should take that, you know, all the time. When their best two players are need 40 shots to get 40 points, that's good. And with Beilein, I thought doing a very clever thing, putting, I was skeptical about Carr, Z being able to handle Carr, particularly as he got closer to the basket, but he just switched, or didn't switch, but he when Carr tried to post up or when he moved with the ball towards the basket, Z did a good job staying in front of him in both centers. I mean, Mo and Teske did a phenomenal job of doubling him and at worst getting the ball out of his hand. So, yeah, that was a terrific game plan. One other note, I thought in the Wisconsin game, and I think we haven't mentioned this, that, you know, I'm always, you know, heartened, or I'm not sure what the word is, maybe amazed and happy about Beilein's flexibility. We went a minute 40 in the Wisconsin game with Teske and Mo on the court. And that was the right game, you know, that was a game where you could play them together, and it worked pretty well. It was a 4-3 stretch, but it worked pretty well. It was a nice sort of breakup or variance from what they were doing, and same for last night, as Brian pointed out, when they went to zone for a bit. It didn't look at first like it was going to work. They got the easy look from about 13 feet, but then it tightened up. And when Michigan then went back to man, it seemed more impressive that Penn State seemed to have difficulty adjusting back.
Yeah, you just had to disrupt the rhythm. They had gotten such a rhythm coming out of the break, and Michigan was able to disrupt that with the zone. Very active hands. They got some turnovers that way. And I really feel like it was just a matter of allowing their offense to find its way. Brian talked about the struggles out of the gate. Mo put the team on his back for a bit, hit a few big threes, and then once that happened, now everyone else gets their groove again.
Yeah.
And you know, it's fortunate. It's fortunate right now that you see such firepower coming off the bench, because Charles Matthews is struggling so mightily right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say things about how Matthews is playing that are suitable for a family radio show. He's scuffling. And I think we can all agree on that. And I don't know what the recipe is, but I think you do need to continue playing him and going to him, just because I don't know if you can accomplish very much in the postseason with a totally broken Charles Matthews.
Yeah, I'm curious you guys' opinion about what's happened. Obviously, confidence is part of it, but I feel like the scout has caught up with him.
He's been scouted into the ground. So he drives right a lot. He's got kind of a loose handle. So it's kind of amazing how when people dig at the ball, like for one, never a foul. I don't think it is a foul. I just think that it's uncanny that reaching fouls don't happen against Charles Matthews. And he just turns it over way too much. So
yeah, when he goes to the rim, he goes to the rim with his head down. He's not passing the basketball, and you know his handle, loose dribble is a good way to put it. That's, you know, his handle is not his strong suit, and so he winds up driving in the traffic. You get shots that are either heavily contested, blocked, or he turns it over. He's just not very efficient driving the basketball. But we have seen him show some effectiveness when he gets the ball coming off action. He's curling off a screen. He's basket cutting again to the ball, although he wasn't able to finish that last night either.
No.
So, but
yeah, that was just kind of weird. Like, I think there was just something off about him last night. Just
It's been off about him last night, it's been off pretty much the whole Big Ten season. So he started off really well, but once you look at his numbers against Big Ten teams, he's got a sub-100 O-rating. So
yeah, what I want to get to when we come back on the other side is, you know, Beilein's adjustment in this game was – he went more JP. At one point, you were able to have
Mean Mung the camera.
Yeah, that was great. I thought that was awesome.
That was a play of the year, man.
Yeah, Beilein
didn't like that.
I know he didn't.
What did he do? He looked at the camera.
No, Beilein said about a month and a half, 2 months ago, you know, Jordan's an interesting player for me to coach. And I think that that's what he was getting at, something like that. But to Beilein's credit, he's letting it go.
Sure.
He's letting it go. And you got to, I mean, it's – team sometimes needs a little, they need a little influx of personality.
I got to defend the kid, man. What did he do? He looked at the camera.
Yeah, he looked at the
camera. He didn't talk trash to anyone. He looked mean at the camera. Chest.
And I, it was,
he looked at the camera.
He knew what he was doing.
There was some flexing. There was some flexing going
flexing
on
the
here.
Camera.
I mean, he didn't.
You know, the thing is, though, no one seems less in character than Jordan Poole by doing that. What he should have done is looked at the camera and said, "Hi, Mom." And then it would have felt perfect at that point to me. And yeah, that's my suggestion to him. Next time he looks in the camera, "Hi, Mom." Because he's not a tough guy. I mean, I don't know, you know, what the deal is there.
I think it's sort of funny. Yeah, but when you facialize someone, you get to look in the camera.
We got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side. Talk about the stretch run here. It's Michigan, Maryland, and it's Penn State, Nebraska. That's what it comes. That's what the four seed in the Big Ten tournament comes down to. Talk a little bracketology as well. So a lot more to get to here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. All right, so fellas, Michigan, Maryland, give me your handicap that game for me. The Wolverines, if they are going to get the four seed, get the double bye, they have to beat Maryland, and then of course they have to rely upon Penn State to go in and beat Nebraska. So let's start off with the first of that two-game scenario, Michigan versus Maryland. What do you think about that contest?
Well, their first game was the Monday after the Michigan State game, and that was like their first really terrible 20.5 performances in the first half, and then they got lightning hot from three. Got up 10 and then nearly blew it down the stretch. Did blow it, and then Livers and Marr pulled it out. So at their place, that's going to be a tough game, especially because they have a couple of guys who can just rise up. Like, I think 8 of their first half points were just people flinging it up with the shot clock expiring and going in. Anthony Cowan is a really good unassisted three shooter. They did a great job of locking down Herder, but I don't know if anyone can actually lock down Cowan. So they're going to have the refereeing advantage because they're at home. They're a tough team, and Michigan will do well to beat them.
Ed? Yeah, my numbers are going to make Maryland 1.5-point favorite in that game. So not a game that they should win, but I mean, I do believe this Michigan team is the third best team of the Big Ten. And I think we'll hopefully see that heading into, I mean, I think Michigan State and Purdue are better, but I think this is a better team on a neutral court than any other team, even though my numbers would actually have Ohio State ahead of them. I think they're the third best team in the league.
Craig Ross?
This game, KenPom has it as a 2-point win for Michigan, actually. Is that right? No,
it's
for
Maryland.
With Maryland in a 56% chance. I see the game as a toss-up. I've over points in time in the season, I've lost faith in this team and kept thinking they just can't do it the way they're doing it, and then I'm become disabused of that. I maybe it's just the idea of watching a team that essentially is winning by playing such good defense. And so when I do think when you play defense the way Michigan plays defense, that it does give you a better chance on the road. And that because defense is easier to be consistent with than offense. And so I think it's a toss-up game. We should end up with a pretty good seed in the NCAAs almost regardless. I mean, I think what KenPom has us at number 20 in the country right now.
Yeah, but that
I can't imagine. I know, but I can't.
I think it does matter with the committee. Like it's changed the last couple years.
It matters a hair, but it doesn't matter as much as maybe it should. I will say this because I think you guys are all onto something about it. It's a toss-up game when you go in a tough environment. Yeah. This will be a quadrant one type game for Michigan.
Yeah.
And if it's a toss-up game, and then it comes down to John Beilein versus mediocre Mark Turgeon, I'm going with John Beilein.
Well, you are.
And by the way, the mediocre Mark did not come from me. That is actually something that started in College Park and is catching steam that they call him mediocre Mark.
Turgeon's won a lot of games, man.
I remember
Michigan. Yeah, but not games that he blew it a few years ago. He had a terrific team. He is an average coach.
You know, what I recall going back to that game is, you know, Michigan's guards and wings shot terribly
at the rim too.
In
like they were
game.
Getting to the rim a lot. Like this is like the first like real Charles Matthews scuffle where it felt like he went 0-for-8 from within 2 feet. And I thought that was an anomaly at the time.
Right.
And for the rest of the team, it was.
Right, but you know, you got to, like Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman, for instance, is playing much better basketball. I mean, there's a lot of room, even though it's on the road. You know, tough place, hard to project them, as you said, limiting their shooters. In their place, but Michigan has a lot of room to play better itself offensively.
And you know, I mentioned the turnaround for Michigan. It was the second day after the Michigan State game, so a big emotional victory. And Maryland hadn't played since Thursday, right. So that's going to be a big difference from the first game, where Michigan just comes out in that game and they're just dead.
All right, so let's assume for the sake of argument that Michigan wins that game, and then you look Sunday to Penn State, Nebraska. We know Penn State's a really good team. Michigan had a great defensive plan. You know that Nebraska is really versatile.
Where is that game?
It's in Lincoln.
Okay.
It's in Lincoln. Now, Penn State barely beat Nebraska early in the season. Mm-hmm. This is a team in Penn State that just barely got beaten by Purdue. So
if Watkins can't go, I don't see them winning that game, because you know there's a big drop off to his backups, and Isaiah Roby has been playing out of his mind. Like that is going to be like the top center in the league next year, I think. Isaiah Roby, he's blocking all kinds of shots. He's really efficient from the floor, and if you're posting up Jabroni number one and Jabroni number two against him, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah, so Michigan locked in. They are locked into at least the five seed. If the scenario we've been talking about plays out, then they would go up to the four seed and get the double bye. But what about the NCAA tournament? I pulled these up earlier today. Jerry Palm has Michigan, and this was a couple of days, this was before the Penn State game, had Michigan as a seven seed, taking on North Carolina State as a 10 seed in Charlotte, which is, as I said to Ira, how the hell can't happen?
I don't think people actually put that much time into where people go. You see, Lunardi will put Michigan up against teams they've already played in the second round a ton, which he had earlier in the year. So it's just look at the seeds.
Yeah, because I saw one that had recently, and it wasn't, I don't think it was Lunardi or Palm, but a recent one that had Michigan playing Texas in the first round, which.
Right, yeah. I mean, it can't happen.
You can't just straight S-curve if you want to rank the 68, you know, take your automatic qualifiers, and you can't just straight S-curve it, as we discussed, Sam, earlier this morning. You have to. There will be some finagling of that bracket to not have NC State playing Duke in the second round. It's just not going to happen.
But as a a predictive exercise, like just doing a straight S curve is fine.
Right, so, to start, absolutely.
So he has. You know, we're just talking about the seed line.
Yeah.
He has Michigan as a seven seed. Joe Lunardi has Michigan as a five seed. So the question that I posed to Ira this morning is how high does Michigan need to go to be able to land in Detroit? Is it possible?
No. Because there's a lot of teams that are ahead of them in the pecking order. Obviously, Michigan State, probably Purdue.
So Xavier.
If Michigan wins Xavier. The Big Ten tournament.
Well, there's one in Pittsburgh as well. So.
There is.
Oh, that's interesting.
If Michigan,
that would be for Ohio State maybe, but Xavier, Xavier's 20 miles closer to Detroit than they are to Nashville.
Okay, so that might.
But the committee will actually not. They'll put them. But Nashville may be then used for two SEC schools that are closer to Nashville.
Yeah.
So let's say Michigan wins the Big Ten tournament, knocks off Michigan State and Purdue. So
they're at least a four.
Yeah, they're a four.
And then
that only gets them to a four.
It might be a three, but they're still probably behind both those teams.
Because both of those teams are two seeds. They're two seeds in Lunardi's bracketology. So
I don't think one loss
knocks them down a seed.
Knocks them down below Michigan.
Yeah,
I mean, Michigan will have beaten Michigan State twice.
Yeah, I still don't think so. I mean, this is a very this is where the stupid addition of Rutgers to the league really hurts, because the schedule has been so unbalanced. You know, Michigan State didn't play at four of the top five teams in the league. They got them all at home, and they got them once. And so,
Brian, out of the four, out of those top five, so through Michigan, how many actually played the other ones more? How many? You know, Michigan played Ohio State twice. They played Purdue twice.
Yeah.
Did anybody else in the top five play two of those top five twice?
I think there was one other top five matchup that happened twice, but I don't remember what it was. So it's been a really dilute year at the top of the standings. Can I pitch my Scottish Premier League version of the Big Ten?
Sure.
Yeah.
So you have a round robin, and then after the round robin, you split the league into two halves, and you play again. So this wouldn't happen. You'd get the top six if you were in the top seven. And
but that, I mean, doesn't that maybe hurt you RPI-wise or second half of the season?
I mean, you want to play big games. You'd be more likely.
Yeah, I mean, you get better for TV for sure.
You'd be more likely to have a one seed, that's for sure. You might have a little bit of trouble in the bubble. But anyway, Michigan seeding is actually a pretty interesting thing because I looked it up and they have a quadrant one problem. So if you look at the ESPN strength of record metric, they're a solid four seed at this point. But if you look at their quadrant one games, they're like 3-6 now, maybe 4-6 if Penn State counts, which it doesn't.
It doesn't, right.
But they're close, so root for Penn State for several reasons. But the problem with Michigan's quadrant one games is they're like four of them are on the road against top 10 teams. So teams would be expected to lose those games. If you look at strength of record, Michigan is a four seed. If you look at quadrants, like I think Jerry Palm is, then they're a seven. So it's hard to tell what the committee should do, given last year's Big Ten seeding where Minnesota gets a completely undeserved five seed and proves that immediately.
We all knew that, though, right?
They game their non-conference schedule pretty well last year, but Michigan doesn't do that.
And they shouldn't. I mean, come on.
Their NCSOS is a terrible metric, and we'll see if that bites them. It kind of did last year. We'll see if it does this year.
So what are we defining as this quadrant one business?
Quadrant one is a home game against a top 30 RPI opponent, a neutral site game against a top 50 opponent, or a road game against a top 75 opponent.
And Penn State was 76.
Yes. So root for Penn State.
But they move up when they beat Nebraska, and then we'll be the fourth.
You know, if they beat Nebraska.
In the Big Ten tournament.
I mean, this is
– how can Penn State be 76 when they're sitting even today at 27 on KenPom?
Because their non-conference RPI schedule was an abomination.
Okay.
They only played three power conference teams, two of them in their tournament, which you don't get to play those games.
A lot of quadrant four matchups.
Yeah, and
a lot of them.
And they played in the Big Ten ACC Challenge because they have to. Everything else was complete trash. And now that they have a fairly decent team, that's really coming back to bite them. So,
well, and RPI doesn't use margin of victory, which makes it a terrible predictor, and that's why they're down at 70.
Okay. You know, isn't the problem that you really can't solve the problem because we've got a 14-team conference and there's no real way of coming up with a good solution? I mean, as you point out, I mean, this year Michigan played their top five teams on the road. They played MSU, Nebraska, Penn State, Purdue, OSU, and Maryland. They'll play them all on the road. And Michigan State, who's, you know, the most talented team in the conference, misses Michigan, Nebraska, Penn State, and Purdue on the road, which is absurd. Now, it wasn't something that was designed that way. It just worked out that way.
Although, if you remember, a few years ago, Izzo was complaining about the imbalance of the schedule, so now it comes back to his favor, so maybe he campaigned well.
It doesn't
matter.
I just think it's impossible.
Yeah. They are adding two games next year, so maybe that'll help.
It is also why the postseason tournament dictates who gets your automatic bid. That's why most conferences outside the Big Ten count their conference champion as their champion. Like the ACC, the regular season champ is called the regular season champ, and the tournament champ is called the champ. The Big Ten is like the only conference left in America where the regular season champ is called the champion, and the postseason tournament champion is called the tournament champion. It's pretty much the only conference in America left doing that.
Yeah. We got to get to a break. We come back on the other side. We got to spend some what remaining time we have left on an outstanding weekend on the ice for the Michigan hockey team. We'll get to that. The other side here, the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. Big weekend, Brian, for Michigan hockey last week.
Yeah, I mean, they needed at least one from Notre Dame, and a sweep was real good. They got that sweep. And Notre Dame was the number one team in the country, and they're still on path for a one seed. And to go toe-to-toe with that team over the course of four games without having Lockwood for any of those games, without having Hughes and Norris for the first two, I think it speaks really well to how far this team has come from last year when they were one of the worst teams in the country. So
do they just match up well with Notre Dame? Because they played them well earlier in the season. They lost, but that was kind of the start. Those losses were kind of start of a run for the hockey team.
Yeah, I mean, they played they played those teams that even – I don't know if it's a matchup thing or like – it just felt like whoever scored the first goal was going to win either of those games because neither of these teams is super high-end in terms of offense. And then the Sunday game, I don't think there was a single odd man rush, which I don't know if I've really ever seen before. So Notre Dame, ever since Jeff Jackson arrived, has been a relentlessly disciplined program. You know, they don't make a ton of mistakes. Their goalie has a 950 save percentage, and I don't think he's Lou Vezina. I don't know who if Vezina's first name was Lou. you know, he's probably a good goalie, but I think his save percentage is largely an artifact of how disciplined and how skilled Notre Dame is at playing defense. So, you know, Michigan went toe-to-toe with that this weekend, and they came out on top. And now they have Arizona State this weekend. Arizona State is an independent. They just started a program, so they're kind of scuffling right now. They need both these games. They should get both these games if they play to where their capability is. And then, you know, they're pretty much a lock for the tournament if they beat Arizona State.
You know, important kind of assessment from you, Brian, maybe you, Ira, any of you guys. You know, you see Michigan knock off the number one team in the country, and, you know, your question is, okay, so, well, what is Michigan's ceiling? What were your takeaways from that matchup and kind of extrapolated, you know, into the remainder of the season, into the postseason?
Well, this is a very wide open year. BU and BC have the most talent in the country, and they're currently on the outside looking in. You have a team that in Notre Dame, who Michigan just beat twice, who's probably going to get a one seed. You have another ECAC team on the path for one seed. There is not one dominant North Dakota-type team that just has a ton of NHL talent and that's just killing people. So if you get into the tournament, you have about as good a chance as anyone to come out on top. Now, this isn't Michigan's year. You know, they're still coming from a place that was real low down before. They don't have a single standout offensive star who's like an NHL lock. You know, Norris might be there next year. Cooper Merity might be there next year if he comes back. But they don't have a Porter or a Hensick or a Comfer or a Connor. And if they had that, they'd really be in business. But this is a team that gets by on scoring by committee. It gets by on having a really good defensive depth. They've got a shot if they get it, because anybody does.
Yeah, Brian, I have a question. I mean, we've been a really good 5-on-5 team, particularly defensively, I think.
Yep.
But we've been terrible on the penalty kill. We're one of the worst teams in the country. I'm looking at 23-plus percent on the penalty kill. And power play isn't very good either. It's, you know, I think we're 55 on the penalty kill and 46 on the power play. I mean, those are really terrible numbers. Yeah, I mean,
what's the deal with that?
What is the deal?
I don't know. I assume that maybe the special teams have fallen behind because they were really trying to get this system in, and maybe it hasn't had the requisite focus so far, but that's speculation.
Yeah. All right. Well, guys, as always, another really good show. We'll be back with another roundtable session next week. Thanks for listening.